VoiceOver describes what's happening on your iPhone screen.
VoiceOver on, settings.
So you can navigate it just by listening.
Books, contacts, calendar, double tap to open. Breakfast with Anna from 10 to 11.
And get on with your day. Accessibility. There's more to iPhone.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Welcome along to The Ruck, the rugby podcast from The Times and The Sunday Times. And for the second week in a row, a bonus episode for you on this Thursday.
We love a special.
We do indeed. I'm Alfie Reynolds. That's the voice of Will Kelleher.
Hello.
Alex Lowe is also with us.
Hello.
And after the Red Roses last week, where we went a bit behind the scenes and spoke to them ahead of their big game at Twickenham, we are back previewing another big game at Twickenham, but in the Gallagher Premiership.
Yeah, and we like staying about in the A3 corridor. We were at Penny Hill Park last Wednesday, which everyone would have listened to last week, Thursday, at Kildan and all those guys. And this week we're at Harlequins, who are down the road at Surrey Sports Park. So we're here, another big game at Twickenham, should be a belter. And Quins have got two big ones in the next couple of weeks, don't they?
Well, they do, with the Champions Cup. So this weekend it is the big summer kickoff, one of two games each year, which they take to Twickenham, put on a big event, do loads of cool stuff around it. I think a bumper crowd, 60,000 roughly they're expecting.
Yeah, well, Northampton, top of the table, they'll be bringing in a few.
Good game,
isn't
it?
It's a really good game. And the race to the top four over the last few rounds is gripping. Northampton are almost there. They've got a big European semi-final to prepare for, as well as Harlequins, but no one can really afford to take a backward step in the Premiership. So the way that the two teams play, I think we can safely forecast an entertaining game of rugby.
Well, sometimes because they've been doing these games since friend of the pod Mark Evans basically helped create the big game, the Christmas one, haven't they? Sometimes you think, oh, it's possibly the wrong opponent, or the result doesn't quite go the way and it slightly falls flat as an event, or the match is not as huge as it could be. But this one really feels like it is. The two English teams that are in the Champions Cup semi-finals, really important, particularly for Quins. They really need to win to keep that momentum up to try and make the top four. So it should be great on and off the pitch.
So coming up on the podcast today, we're going to be speaking to a couple of players. We've got Chandler Cunningham South and Caden Murley. We'll also get the coaching point of view with head coach Danny Wilson, and we'll chat to the CEO in the boardroom, Laurie Dalrymple, as well. And I feel like one of the really interesting things, guys, that I'm intrigued to get a perspective from the inside on is just Quins and how they go about their business and this reputation they have for just incredibly entertaining, high scoring, but kind of mad games, and how that comes about from the players' perspective, the coaches and the CEO and everyone.
Every club has their little mantra, their little words that
their identity.
The identity that sums about them. Quinn's one spells out true, T-R-U-E, and the U is unconventional, which is about right, really, isn't it? I mean, I think they sort of have to do it in the maddest, most bonkers way possible, don't they? They don't. If it was a football thing, they don't do a park the bus 1-0, do they? Like, they have to go and do it madly. So, but it's quite interesting from a sort of rugby perspective, particularly someone like Danny Wilson, who we'll get to later in the pod, about do you try and row back from that as a coach, just particularly if you've come in from somewhere else, or do you have to kind of buy it in? I remember when they appointed Tabai Matson the season after they'd unexpectedly won the Premiership, and interviewing him, and he was picked as their coach to fit what they wanted, rather than the other way, where you'd say, like, Steve Borthwick came into Leicester to implement what he was doing. They picked the coach to suit them, kind of thing. So it's interesting how that all moulds. They've decided what the way is, and so everyone has to kind of fit into that.
Is it less of a thing in rugby? I feel like we have this conversation about football all the time, of teams, fans demand a certain style. Whereas kind of, as Will says there,
like the Newcastle football thing of,
Yeah.
They all want to be the Kevin Keegan team of the 90s, almost, don't they?
Yeah, or like exactly. That's probably quite a good example where there's fans want a certain type of. In rugby, it's kind of less so, Alex, but I think Quinns are maybe one of the outliers.
Yeah, I think there's so many different ways to win a game of rugby, and the conditions can determine how a game goes, that you kind of, in an ideal world, you'd have the ability to adapt how you play for that day and that opposition. But I do think that countries maybe more than clubs have an identity. Like, you know how South Africa are going to play.
Yeah.
And you know, one of the things that France did so well when they won the Grand Slam was that they managed to dispense with the French way, or not dispense with it, but mould it. In, you know, they reinforced it with Sean Edwards' defence, for example. It's quite rare within the English game, I'd say. We've seen, you know, years back, 2015, Bath made the Premiership final playing in a certain way that was influencing how England were going to play, and then suddenly they fell flat in the final because they ran into Saracens. And Saracens played the Saracens way up until a couple of years ago, and it was pragmatic. And it wasn't necessarily easy on the eye, but it was incredibly effective. Control the game, physical. But then they've evolved their style too, and you know, I think Saracens fans would learn to love how their team played because they were winning. And now they're a team who are capable of winning in different ways. And also, what you describe there doesn't actually... It's a romantic view. Mm. Like, I'm a West Ham supporter. And the kind of view that, you know, the West Ham way and the Academy of Football. It's like, West Ham haven't played like that. You know, we had Sam Allardyce as our manager for 4 years. Like, they haven't played that way. But there's this romantic view that that's how West Ham should play. Tottenham fans have the same perspective, and they're actually going through it now with their manager and the way that they want to play. But it's a romantic view. It's not necessarily a winning or pragmatic view. But I think what we're seeing with Northampton, and we're seeing with Harlequins, and you see over the water with teams like Toulon, is there's a way of it matching an expectation while also being a winning brand of rugby.
But that's where I think when Quins have gone away from what they're about, they've struggled. Like, under Paul Gustard, he would probably try to change too much of what their DNA was.
Yeah, that's a good example, yeah.
Whereas when they sort of took the handbrake off and freewheeled to that final, it all happened for them so nicely, and Saracens weren't around, which are usually their bogeymen for them. But you think that sometimes it's a good thing for a club to just lean into what they're about, lean into their DNA. It worked for Leicester a couple of years ago, didn't it, to lean into that completely different one. So it's going to be interesting here to hear about how they actually do that and what a week like this looks like.
And also, not just from a winning on the field, the Stoop has been sold out virtually every week for 3 years. They take two games across the road to Twickenham in front of a combined total of, 140,000 fans. Like, a lot of that gets driven by the fact that, you know, you don't know whether they're going to win or not, but you know it's going to be a hell of a ride when you're watching them. And that's really valuable to the club. And that's what I'm looking forward to talking to Laurie Dalrymple about a little bit, is that it's not just a way to win a game, but it's a way to, that identity, that DNA, that brand that you see on the field is really attractive and a really important part of their business.
Well, let's find out more about it then. First up on this podcast, focusing on Quins, we're going to be chatting to the England back row, the Quins back row, a man who has had a breakout 12 months or so, is Chandler Cunningham South. Good to see you, Chandler. Thanks for joining us.
No worries. Nice to see you guys.
So, 70 minutes against Sale. Another game coming up this weekend. How are we feeling?
73.
I did you wrong there by three minutes.
Getting through it, getting the match fitness back, going good. The injury and stuff, so everything's feeling good. And then, so just getting back into it.
I think I remember hearing, I think it was Dan Cole once, who said that the only time you're fully fit in your rugby career is basically the first game or the first game of the season. Do you feel it's a bit like that? You're kind of, you get to this point towards the end of the year and it is just making sure you get through every week.
Yeah, you don't feel fresh, I'd probably say, until the first game of the season. But even then you feel tired. So I don't know when you feel your best, but you just get through it 90% as always, probably.
I came here to interview you, I think it was December or January. I learned two fascinating facts. One, your grandmother reads the Times, so she's already a favourite of ours. and the other is your favourite tipple is whiskey, and we were talking about maybe a business plan to launch your own whiskey or rum.
Yeah,
Any progress? How are we looking?
There's been no progress. But we'll see. In the future, definitely. But not yet. But I'll have to come on and shout out when I do.
Yeah, for sure. So, is she an avid reader?
Yeah, I think so. She reads quite a bit. I think they read all the newspapers though, so don't get too happy about that.
You burst our bubble there.
So I thought she was going to be a fan of the Ruck Pod as well. She's going
to listen to this one.
Won't
she?
Have to.
Is she based in the UK or is she over New Zealand?
Yeah, UK. So East London way. Okay, so, yeah, around there.
So was she at the? Because I was thinking back to your last Twickenham experience was a pretty good one with the last few minutes of that Ireland game.
Yeah,
did she come to that?
No, she wasn't there, but my mum was over from New Zealand for that one.
Awesome.
That was a pretty cool one. Besides getting injured, it was it was good. It was good. Really cool game to be a part of. So, yeah,
take us into that. Well, I suppose the last couple of months, really. Like, has it been a whirlwind of sorts? Like, you've come from the Irish situation, the move here, you're suddenly into an England debut, you have that amazing performance against the Irish, but then you injure yourself. Talk about all of that and how it's been for you.
Yeah, lots of ups and downs, just trying to ride the wave, I guess. I'm pretty chill, so just, you know, when it's not so good, just sort of got to be positive, and then when it's going good, just got to, you know, keep my head on. So it's like just keeping chill, I guess.
Do you recognize yourself on the field, because you are like laid back and that's the way you approach life, but anyone who watched you in the Ireland game, who watched you play against Bordeaux, like, you set the tone. I felt watching from the stands the ferocity that you brought, those early carries, it was taking 3-4 defenders to stop you bring that kind of anger, almost like the way that you play on the field. When you sit back here now having a chat and a coffee, do you recognise the version of yourself that takes the pitch?
I suppose it's different when I'm playing, I guess. I'm just more competitive, aggressive as well, I suppose. But yeah, when I'm not playing, I'm just a pretty chill guy, to be honest. No, not very aggressive, but I suppose it's just a switch sort of flicks, and then in game mode, and then it's different then.
How do you flick that switch? Is there anything you do in particular to be able, when you cross that white line, to go into a different headspace?
No, I don't got to myself up, bang my head on the wardrobe or anything like that. I'm pretty chill. I wouldn't say I'm even like angry when I'm playing. I'm pretty relaxed. I try to stay relaxed, otherwise I'll probably get stressed out. But I don't know, just want to win, don't I? So
that's
sort of just throw myself into it, yeah.
Did you take it on yourself to try and set the tone in those first 10, 15 minutes in Bordeaux? Or was it just the way it went, the way that you want to play all the time, and it just happened that you were so important in driving the team forward, and then suddenly you're 14-0 up and a great win's in the offing?
Yeah, I suppose it's probably just pretty lucky they kept passing the ball to me, so just did what I could when I had it. Yeah, it was pretty tiring after those 15 minutes, though, to be fair. For the first game back in 30 degrees, I was pretty knackered, but felt better this week, so that's good.
It's an extraordinary occasion, an amazing win for the club, the biggest in the Champions Cup, and you've got a visit down to Toulouse to play Toulouse. Yeah. I mean, it's a great ride, and that's forgetting the big game on or the big summer kickoff it is this weekend against Northampton. It's a great ride to the end of the season.
Got some exciting ones. Just obviously got to do our best in those, and we obviously don't want to put ourselves in all these positions and then not get anything from it. So we've got to do well in these, especially this weekend, to get in the top four. But excited for the games coming up. This the game this weekend would be cool because I didn't play in the last big game, so it would be cool, exciting. And then to lose away in France, bit of sun, so don't mind that.
We were joking before, we think it's called the big summer kickoff, but it's more like it's big still winter kickoff, isn't it? It's not exactly summer, is it?
I think
all the fans have bought Hawaiian shirts and they're going to be very cold.
It'll be very cold. We should probably, maybe an idea would be to move it to Spain or something time of year.
And
or
we would
Portugal.
Definitely come if that was
I wouldn't mind that. I'm sure people wouldn't mind a holiday as well, so maybe you can tell Larry.
Laura Dalrymple's following you into this room, so
tell Larry, maybe bring that up to him, Portugal. I wouldn't mind that.
Yeah, we'll put that to him.
I was thinking, Chandler, like, we can ask a few of your colleagues about this, but you're one of the guys that's come into this setup recently. How are you with the kind of Quinn's chaos? Because it seems like whatever Quinn's do, it has to be done the most wild way possible, doesn't it? Like the Bordeaux win, you've had results before you were here that are all madness. It's a bit like Liverpool, isn't it, sometimes in the football, where they can't win it 1-0, it has to be 4-3. Like, are you scratching your heads as to why that happens, or do you kind of enjoy the roller coaster of it and the kind of, like you say, you're chilled out guys, so maybe it doesn't stress you too much, but do you think we need to nitpick it as to why it's happening, or you just think, well, that's the Quinn's way, it's how it has to be almost?
Yeah, I don't know. I feel like obviously the game in the weekend, we just started really slow and then we're coming back and then obviously couldn't get it, but then usually we start really fast and then the team will come back into the game and then we got to do it again. So it's like, I don't know how we amend that. That's probably up to some bigger brains, the coaches or something like that, but we play a different sort of way of rugby, I guess, and we throw the ball around a bit more than other teams, and obviously Saints throw the ball around a lot as well, so it's going to be an exciting game this weekend. So yeah, we'll see what happens.
Is it a fun style to be part of? Like, and England kind of didn't quite go fully that way, but the last few weeks were quite exciting and high tempo, weren't they? Is that, how enjoyable is that to play in?
I think, yeah, any team that wants to attack, it's very exciting. Like, with England as well, like, we started to really attack in the later parts of the Six Nations, and we were trying to attack. And I think Quins have always sort of attacked. So being a part of a team that wants to score tries, break the line, that's exciting, and that's what everybody wants to do at the end of the day.
Chandler, can I just ask you, I know we've got to let you go in a second, but what has this kind of last year or 18 months been like for you? Because it feels like, obviously, breaking into the England team, it's been a bit of a standout year and a breakout year for you. Like, has life changed? It's quite clear, chatting to you over the last 10 minutes, that you're a pretty chilled out guy. I can't imagine you've changed too much. But has there been anything that happened that makes you feel like, I don't know, you've made it? Or do you know what I mean? Like, you get recognised more or anything like that in terms of playing more for Quins and playing for England?
Not really, to be honest. It's all pretty same, drive the same car, still live in the same flat with the boys, so it's not. No.
Who do you live with?
Will J and Cass. Will Joseph and Cass Cleaves. But yeah, no, everything's pretty the same. I wouldn't say anything's changed drastically. Haven't got a free car yet, so if anybody wants to get me one of those, I wouldn't mind.
Have you noticed, like, your Instagram followers going wild through the Six Nations and stuff like that, or not really? Or
yeah, obviously got a few more followers and stuff. DMs are still dry though, so it's nothing, bro.
I'm thinking too about, like, your past and maybe your future. Let's see what happens. Hopefully you make it onto the summer tour, but just how cool would that be if you did, to go to New Zealand where you spent a lot of your formative years and grew up as a man and all that, like, that would be a fun experience
very cool.
To go back and link back with it.
Yeah, I'm obviously really want to go on that, and obviously just got to play really well and hopefully get picked on that. But yeah, that's the goal, definitely. That's what I want to be doing. Japan and New Zealand, that'd be awesome.
And do your parents still live out there?
Yeah, still live out there as well.
Whereabouts are they?
Like Auckland.
Okay.
So yeah, one of the games are in Auckland as well. So yeah, definitely would want to be on that tour. But yeah, hopefully.
Well, Chandler, we got to let you go. Gym session, is it now?
Gym session, get a little pump on, and then, yeah.
Do you know what's on the menu for the workout today?
Depends how the body's feeling, bro. I'm not the biggest gym guy, but probably some uppers today, I guess.
Okay.
Get on the bench.
You'll get through it. Appreciate you joining us on The Ruck, and all the best for the weekend, the rest of the season, hopefully a tour in the summer.
Awesome. Thank you very much. Appreciate that, guys.
So next through the door is the Harlequin CEO, Laurie Dalrymple. Laurie, nice to see you. Thanks for speaking to us. We've just been speaking to Chandler Cunningham South, and we're looking ahead to the big summer kickoff this weekend, big event at Twickenham. Because of the weather and the fact that summer looks miles off in the UK at the moment, he was suggesting that maybe we could look to moving it to Spain as a possibility. I don't know, logistically at this time in the week, it might be a bit difficult. But
that's not a bad idea, is it? It's so cold outside. We keep having these false starts where, I don't know, every other weekend I think, spring's finally grinding into gear, and then you get to Monday and it's like, oh man, it's freezing cold and there's a wind chill, and yeah, it's not the best, is it? But having said that, I mean, we're practically in May. We're kind of, from a marketeer's point of view, you're thinking you're moving into reasonably safe territory as you get into May, but no, we'll have to.
At least you're not trying to sell county cricket, which is, that is a hard sell in April and cold.
Was it Essex players with, like, snoods on and everything in the field? Yeah. God. But your team walking across the road again with the Gurkhas, is that right?
Yeah, so this is, we did some pre-season training with the Gurkhas, to change it up a bit in the summer. Andy Sanger, our sort of player welfare lead, had a link in And I think we wanted to do something a bit different. We've done some bits in the past which have been quite nice to do, and equally this was something that was going to probably take them out of their comfort zone a bit. And put it this way, I think by the time they got to the end of the 3 days, they were pretty rinsed. And they'd had a different sort of life experience that not only made them have to sort of think for themselves and had created a lot more team cohesion, and but equally saw an exposure to how another organisation works and how they build teamwork and cohesion and build that bond and the culture and the environment within them. And I think they were exposed to some pretty special individual stories of courage and determination and triumph over adversity. So, yeah, so we've sort of fostered this bit of a friendship with them through this. And so they're going to lead the team over on the weekend. And the walkover is a real special part for us, whether it's big game or big summer kickoff, because clearly our home's in the same sort of postcode as Twickenham. So the fans see it as a real opportunity to connect. And that's a big sort of thing that we double down on in terms of that sort of fan engagement.
Can you talk to us about, because the big game thing has been around for a while now, hasn't it? And the big summer kickoff's quite new. Can you talk to us from the sort of your position, the importance of this game for the whole thing? Because I know that you're really keen to engage with new fans, bring people to Twickenham, but also there's the financial side of it too, which is clearly massively important. So can you just talk us through what these weeks are like from that side and how they boost the club on lots of different fronts, I suppose?
Yeah, it's multifaceted in some ways. I think first of all, from a playing side, I think they really get behind it. Like the team will be pretty pumped this week, because for some of our players, playing at Twickenham is not probably a regular occurrence either as they'd like, or some of them aren't English maybe. So that opportunity presents itself twice a year. So this is probably, you know, after the big games in Europe or obviously trying to get to the sort of knockout stages in the Prem, this will be the game, I imagine, that the players look to in the fixture list, where they want to try and be fit and put themselves in the best sort of window for a selection. But it's big for the club in terms of obviously the financials that we've spoken about in the past. You know, without this, comparatively to the Stoop, this will turn over probably 3-4 times what we can achieve at the Stoop from a financial perspective.
So it's what, nearly 60,000 or pretty much 60 on the nose will come?
Yeah, so probably just under, but somewhere between 58 and 60. I mean, this is its third iteration. So we probably set ourselves a bit of a target by the third or fourth one, if we could get it sort of close to sell out. We're only using the lower and the middle tier. We were slightly sort of pegged back last year with the train disruption. We've gone 48 to 44 and now we'll be up to nearly 60. So we're pretty pleased. Well, we're very pleased with the progress. And then, as I say, in the next sort of year or two, we'd like to sort of be filling out the top tier, just like Big Game does. And as I say, the sort of the threshold to make it more viable than what a Stoop match would be is about 40,000. So we're well into this sort of justifying its existence from a financial perspective. But it goes beyond that. So all week this week, we're hosting what was the Surrey Cups, now renamed as the Harlequins Cup. So we've got various age group finals being played at the Stoop every evening this week.
I was there on Monday night.
Oh, were you? Oh, right,
watching
nice.
the Wallingham under-16s.
Oh, nice one. How did
win
it?
By a point.
They won by a point?
Beat Farnham by a point, yeah.
Oh, well,
it was a great game. It was really good. Really, it was great. You know, there were hundreds and hundreds of people there watching.
Yeah.
Were back-to-back games, weren't there?
And, yep.
Yeah, it's special for the kids. I mean, my son is 3 years below that.
Right.
But he left kind of thinking, I want to play at the Stoop.
Oh, 100%.
I want to get there.
Yeah, so aspirationally, you know, I think our job ultimately is, we're clearly in an internet entertainment space, but we're trying to grow either a viewing audience or some degree of player throughput. So we want to be able to have an academy pathway that I think gives players, young players, both male and female, that aspirational ability to think, yeah, anything's possible here, and they'll get the right nurturing and the right care if they come into Quinns, and if they want to be the next Ellie Kildun, who's absolutely lighting up at the moment, or you want to be Marcus or Chandler, then Quinns is a club that can realise that dream. But equally, for those that want to come and view the game, and hopefully, I think the identity of us as a club is, we're a bit different to the rest, but that's what we kind of thrive on, and that's what we sort of take to market. Then events like this week, not least for the financials, but for the community engagement aspect that we can massively amplify and increase way more than we would normally do for a week at the Stoop, for example, is massive. I mean, fortuitously, I think we've got two of the most exciting teams in the league.
I was going to say, despite all that, the rugby,
yeah,
the game itself, which is at the heart of everything, is a humdinger, isn't it?
Oh, 100%. And So it's funny, I was at both Mark Darvin and I sit on a we sit on the PWR board, and we had a board meeting yesterday, and we were sat opposite at the table at each other, and I was halfway through, I'm so itching to ask who he's going to select or who they're going to select for the weekend, but not sure he's ever going to tell me. But it's interesting, you know, you've got two clubs that I think probably, in my opinion, play the game in a really exciting way, that if we're talking about attracting fans and engaging an audience, then I think we've probably got two of the most exciting teams in the league that just fortuitously, they're having an absolutely wonderful season. Probably started to see the foundations of that maybe last year for fair, or at least sort of congratulating them in that regard. So they've come in white hot form, and you know they've really sort of set the pace. So I think they'll want to play. We know we'll want to play. Our record at Twickenham is good. So obviously it's an enjoyable place for us to go normally. And then you've got arguably two of the best four teams in Europe in this year's competition, matching up at Twickenham on Saturday, and then both of us have got some semi-final business to take care of a week later.
Do you think these events are important as a wider thing too? Because particularly post-COVID, and we've seen so much about how rugby's struggling and been reporting on it for the last 3 or 4 years, to find new ways of making money, basically. Mm. Being creative and not always relying on the old ways of doing things, because they basically haven't worked as well. Like, everyone still largely makes losses.
Yeah.
How important do you think this is, not just to have a good day out on the weekend, but actually to like project rugby to different places and make more revenue streams, I suppose, open up?
Yeah, hugely. And I think, look, we're obviously conscious that we're fortunate that Twickenham's literally on our doorstep. And again, credit should go to the management team or people that have sort of sat in the seat, certainly before me and before some of my sort of colleagues, that they had the bravery to invest in a product like this sort of 15 years ago. But I think hopefully it's not just about generating a revenue-generating opportunity for Harlequins. I think this is about putting a sport into a bigger shop window, so that as a viewing audience, you know, we talk a lot about all boats rising at, you know, a similar time. And I think that's really important, that we try and capture that sort of level of sort of equality of growth, because there's little point if Quins are sort of, you know, seeing huge amount of upturn, which is great for us singularly. And obviously for shareholders, investors, that's brilliant. But we need the whole league to have an improved level of visibility, which it is, to be fair. And this is the challenge. Like, if you look at all the viewing stats and the attendance stats, and you know, this league comparatively to previous years, where we've got, you know, you've got six teams, you can all still make the playoffs. You've got three games left. Pretty stressful in this seat, may I add, for you guys. Like, this should be like absolute sort of like, you know, brilliant sort of stuff, because you're getting great content to write about, and the league's in such, from so many respects, the league's in really rude health. But yeah, products like this and games like this, I think, should hopefully let us all have a chance to sort of grow and succeed out of it.
You've got 60,000 coming this weekend, give or take. How many Quins fans are you taking down to Toulouse? And is there any sense of frustration within the club that they're not boarding a flight to Marseille or Montpellier in a more of a neutral city than Toulouse?
Yeah, look, I think there probably is. I understand the fact they've finished as the highest seeded team, and they should do that. You know, they were excellent in the pool stages, and I suppose they are. You would look at it on a paper, at least, and some of their performances through the competition, and go, yeah, they're rightly seeded one. However, yeah, it's a slight oddity that we're in Toulouse when I think it's probably a rest weekend for the top 14. So I don't know why we couldn't have potentially viewed other grounds. However, that's not going to massively fuel our motivation or either frustrators or concerners or motivators in any other way. Like, we're going to go down there and swing the bat and have a massive go, just like we did.
And have you got thousands booked up to come?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. Certainly, we both clubs were given priority blocks. They went pretty quick. We got some more. They went pretty quickly. You've only just got to take a stroll through the social channels to see. Yeah, there's a lot of activity, and then equally, if you go on any of the flight search engines on the Sunday night, it was going up and up and up.
Yeah, I was going to say, because actually they probably are flying to Bordeaux or Montpellier.
I am. That's what I'm having to do.
Then jumping on a train to Toulouse.
Well, I was chatting to someone in the week. He said, "Yeah, he was struggling for flights." And I was like, "Have you managed to sort your flights out?" He goes, "Yeah, yeah, I got there in the end." I was like, "Well, what are you doing?" He goes, "Yeah, I'm going Luton to Dublin, I was like, right. And he goes, yeah, and double into Toulouse. I was like, wow. That's,
well, that's kind of the fun. Yeah. I mean, yeah, it's ideal to go straight in, but that's sort of the fun of these weekends, isn't it? This is what the fans follow you around the world for, is these weekends that they can go to and think, I was there in Toulouse when we did it or whatever.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And I suppose that was the, sort of the nice thing about the Bordeaux experience a bit, because I'd felt all week, and in the group we felt, I think, all week that, yeah, there could be something special coming up this weekend. Not least as a bit of a backdrop of, you know, like you said a minute ago, like underdog status, I don't think is necessarily a negative. I know Launchbury was speaking in the week leading up to the game around, actually, do you know what? Sometimes a bit of pressure isn't a negative thing, and you can use it to motivate yourself. So we went in knowing that we had an opportunity to do something. And there's an identity, there's a way in which we play, which I think will scare the hell out of teams. And so it was fantastic to do it for the fans that were there, like, because they put in a huge effort. We'd obviously gone through the Glasgow experience the week before. They're there 6 days later. There must have been 800 of them sat in the blazing heat, didn't stop chanting and singing behind the team. So it's brilliant to do it for them. But actually, I'd say the other people that I think is really... is just really nice is our owners and our investors, because they've been in this since the game went professional. And we've won it a couple of times, and, you know, you have big days and heydays, but to go down there and to make a semi-final for the first time in the club's history, one of them was on the flight with us. So that's the special bit, like, because it just validates, yeah, like, have the confidence, have the trust in the group to, and the management team to invest in things like big game and big summer kickoff, because they bring nice, you know, tangible financial benefits back, but we're all in it to win. Like, it's the emotion of walking on that field and hugging your mate and going, yeah, that was amazing. That's why they do it as much as anyone.
Well, Laurie, it's no doubt going to be an exciting end to the season. Exciting weekend ahead with big summer kickoff as well. So thanks for your time and all the best.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
The train is now approaching. Junction at platform. Passengers, airport, please stay on board. Next stop, Road Station.
iOS helps you control which apps you share your exact location with. There's more to iPhone.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
So next up on the podcast, Caden Murley. Caden, nice to see you. How are you?
Yeah, I'm very good, thank you. How are you guys?
Yeah, we're not too bad. We're enjoying looking ahead to the Northampton game. Big summer kickoff, end of the season as well. Exciting European semi-final to come as well. From a player's perspective, it's a long old season, isn't it? When you factor in a break for the Six Nations and all that sort of thing, how does it feel being at this point? I know Premiership Rugby have billed it as the run-in. Does it feel like a bit of a sprint finish from a player's perspective, or still a long way to go?
There's still a long way to go, but these are the games you want to play in as a player. Like, this run-in, I think, is massively exciting. Like you said, I think there are seven teams, that can, or maybe even eight teams, that can still qualify for that top four. So to be in with a chance is great. And hopefully, yeah, we can show our thing this weekend against Northampton and then hopefully give ourselves a shot like we have done in Europe.
And how exciting is it to have these sorts of the big game, big summer kickoff? I know it's something the club has done for a little while now. But how exciting is it to play over the road, have that sort of event, larger crowd, and just everything that goes with that? I guess a slightly different experience for a home match day.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, we love it as Quinns players. I mean, it's the game everyone wants to be picked for, the big game, and then this big summer kickoff. I mean, I think 60,000 tickets have been sold now, so it's getting towards full, and hopefully next year we can fill it out. But yeah, to be in front of that many people at Twickenham, I thought the sun was going to be out, being called summer kickoff and all that, but it's probably big rainy kickoff now. But yeah, it'll still be a great game, like two attacking teams going at it, chucking the ball around, bit of jouet. Yeah, and we're looking forward to it.
How have the last few weeks been for you guys? Like, has it been a whirlwind with the Bordeaux thing and everything else? And what was that like as an experience, just to go there, do what you did in the manner you did it?
It's very Quinns. I think we spoke before the game. It was all about swinging the bat, give ourselves a shot. We know we've been in situations where everyone wrote us off before. Bristol, Prem final. Big games are always the ones where we go in as underdogs. We always seem to perform. So we knew we had a chance to go to a stadium like that. Was incredible. I mean, I don't know if you've ever been, but you walk under the tunnel to get to the pitches.
And a 4-minute walk, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a long old walk. But you see all the photos of people who have played there before, and it's hosted World Cups before. So Pele was on the wall. Zidane was on the wall, Maradona was on the wall, and we were walking along like, this is some opportunity we got here. Like, it kind of like got us even more excited to play in that arena.
So take me into the kind of bonkersness of playing for Quinns, because like, you've grown up playing for them, you've come through the system, and maybe outsiders look at it and go, how on earth do these guys do it in that way? Like, do you just sort of have to love the chaos a bit and enjoy the roller coaster? Because it's never simple, is it? Like, that case in point, the Bath one, the one before, Glasgow, like, it has to be mad to playing for Quinns, right?
Yeah, we can't even explain it. We don't want to be giving fans heart attacks on the edge of the pitch, like letting teams come back when we're 20 points up, or letting teams get 20 point leads and then having to try and chase it. But I don't know, just something mentally switches for us, and that's just how we do things. And a lot of teams will say, oh, Quinns will go away, and it's soft underbellies and stuff like that. But I think we've shown this season that, especially with our forwards and our set piece, like, we're a tough team to play. And I think on our day, we completely back ourselves to beat anyone.
I was in the stadium that day, and as Bordeaux came back at you with the bench they had, I was kind of thinking, are they going to outlast you? Mm-hmm. And then Marcus hits a 50-22, and you turn the momentum back on them and win the game. And afterwards, someone said that there'd been a chat at half time about, I think you're 16 points up, Bordeaux going to come at us, let's ride it, like, let's not let it, we won't get our heads down because of it. And that mental strength, that clarity of thought, it must be critical when you're playing in the chaos.
Yeah.
To know, like, we know they're going to come at us, that's not going to disrupt what we do, we'll just find our moment to turn it back on them.
100%. And we knew they were going to have their purple patches, where, like, you look at across their back line, across their four pack, they're going to have moments of absolute brilliance, like that pickup. I think it was Deportier who scored in the corner of that, like, unbelievable. And we were like, sometimes you just got to hold your hand and be like, yeah, fair play, that is unreal. We'll ride this little patch, we'll ride the momentum, the crowd's getting behind them. But we know if we can just work our way slightly back into the game, we've got people who can pull magic. And like you said, Marcus's 50-22 was a massive swinging point in that game. Players who can pull a rabbit out of a hat. And to be able to have that on this team, I think, is what excites us the most. Obviously, Finn Baxter going up against Tammy Afuna, everyone was a bit like, oh, this is a test for the young man. And five scrum pens, I think we got, or something ridiculous like that. So it just shows that, like, in this squad, we've got such a good group of young, talented players. And that's what we play for.
Take us onto the flight. What are you singing? Who's leading the songs? Is anyone on the mic at the front?
Yeah, so we had the speaker going. We're all getting a bit rowdy. We're enjoying ourselves. And it was young Oscar Beard's 50th cap. And the woman, the air stewardess, was just walking along the middle. And I went, you know what? This would really pick the lads up. Like, energy was just starting to die. We didn't have too much alcohol on the plane. So boys were on a little bit of a dip. And I just grabbed and I was like, excuse me, could you please ask, could we use the tannoy? And he didn't know anything about it. And I was got into her, and she was like, yeah, I'll go ask my boss. She comes back, she was like, right, my boss has given you one song. One song. Oscar Beer gets up, performs Valerie. We had David Morgan, our chairman, filming it up the front. Everyone's singing along. It was, yeah, that was a really great moment for him, a special moment.
Was this a chartered flight with them?
Yeah, it was a chartered flight. But it would have been even better, I think, if it was public and we got everyone singing.
Well, we were saying earlier, because I think Exeter had something similar earlier this year when they beat Toulon, was it?
But I think Dan Frost, I think, at the front of the plane doing a similar thing. Yeah.
But I think, were there members of the public on
possibly,
that?
Possibly, yeah.
I'm sure I remember seeing a video and thinking, those poor people.
If they're on EasyJet or something. But you kind of have to... Because there'd be points in the season where people would go, come on, next job, like that's the mentality. But do you have to sometimes let the handbrake off and just go, we've got to celebrate that. If that's why we're playing rugby, we can't like miss that opportunity to have a couple of pints.
Yeah, 100%. I think it's a massive achievement for Quins, for obviously the first time progressing past the quarterfinals. I think you look around our squad that day, especially how young our squad was without the two old boys who are stalwarts, obviously. But we had such a young squad. We were on such a high. The club knew that these are the special moments that bring you closer together as a group. And it really did. Like, that Sunday was brilliant. We just had a few quiet ones, celebrated our victory. And then that gives us momentum. And we know we need to keep producing those results so we can create more memories. And it kind of spurs us on.
The swing the bat analogy, which you used that weekend, was there was a lot of depth to it. I mean, it wasn't just let's go out and hit and hope. It really summed up the way that you went and played the game. Laurie used the phrase again about this weekend at Twickenham and then Toulouse. How much is it, do you have to evolve that analogy for the opponent? Or is it now a mentality that you will stick with and a theme that you'll stick with between now and the end of the season?
I think it's always got to be in our mind this end of the season. You've got to swing the bat in every game you're at. But yeah, different opposition you have to tailor. We can't go out and play like we did against Bordeaux against Sale on the weekend. Like, we had to go through. You can't give Sale. They thrive off their defence. And we knew if we tried to run it from everywhere, they'll swallow that up. So you have to change your game plan week in, week out. But it's definitely a group mindset that we've got a massive opportunity come this end of the season. Swing the bat and let's see what we can do as a group.
But explain what it means, because it wasn't recklessness, was it?
No. I think, and I don't know if Billy Millar actually showed a video of, I can't remember who it was, some cricketer hitting six sixes in a game, and all his shots were just controlled. Like, he was going for it. He knew once he got three or four sixes, he wanted six sixes in an over. But they were all controlled. He was going through the motions. He wasn't wildly swinging like you see in like village cricket. He knew what he was doing every swing of the bat. And that's kind of what we spoke about in the... He comes up with some wild themes, by the way. It's crazy. But yeah, it was such a good analogy. And I think people, like, we look back at it and like, that is exactly what we did. Like, Bordeaux, yes, we did run from deep. But when it wasn't on, we did also put boot to ball, we went contestable, we tried to get into Luku, etc. And we did have a game plan that wasn't just Hail Mary, chuck it every time.
And just because of the way of the Premiership is so crazy at the moment, with everything so tight, there's going to be some teams that think they've had a good season that don't make the top four, aren't there? Mm-hmm. It's just the way it's going to work. So how do you have to kind of compartmentalise that as players? Because you might miss out on the top four, but you probably feel like you've had a really good year. Like, yeah, how do you spin it positively and go for it?
Well, we've been looking at every result this year. We haven't really been looking at the 5 points, the 4 points, the 1 point, what the 2 points, whatever you take away from it. We've been looking at our performance, because I think ultimately if you can get... We've had some wins before where we're 5 points from home, but our defence has been absolutely awful. And like, the review will probably be harsher than it was the week before, where we might have got 2 points, but we only conceded 10 points. So like, I guess that's how we'll look on our season. Like, obviously it's a results-driven industry. We want to make top four. We want to give ourselves a chance. We've got to European semi-final, and ultimately some people will say that's good enough. That's not good enough for us. We're thriving. Like I said, the young group, we've got so much ambition in this group, and I think we're obviously losing some big key members of the squad like Andre and stuff, so this is his final chance to show what he can do. And obviously his charge down kick probably didn't help on the weekend, but we won't talk about that. But like, he is massively in and leading us on the right path to this end of the season.
Caden, can I just ask you about England and international aspirations? I don't know if it's something you get bored of talking about or questioned on, but your name is often one of those that you often hear a clamour from fans for you to get an opportunity. I know you've been involved in training squads without necessarily getting the opportunity out on the pitch. How much of a frustration, or maybe not at all, has that been? And how much of an ambition is getting international?
Oh, it's a massive ambition of mine, but I know if I do my job at club, if I'm speaking to my coaches regularly at Quins and keeping in contact with the coaches at England, knowing what I have to improve, keep doing my extras in training, I know that if I get a good run of games, then I should be giving myself a shot. So obviously it's in the back of my mind, like, oh, I really want that cap, really want that cap. But I know if I can get my performance right for club and get my club heading in the right direction, then hopefully that will emulate itself on the international circuit.
And I'd imagine this is maybe not a way that you particularly look at it, but is there any part of you that kind of looks at this England team and the development of it, particularly this year in the Six Nations? And it seems like there's starting to be a transition in terms of the wings from at the World Cup when it was Elliot Daly and Johnny May, and it started to transition to Manny Faye-Wibosso, Tommy Freeman. Do you look at that at all and think it's a positive thing because it seems to be some of the younger guys coming through the development of that team?
100%. They were the two in-form wingers in the Premiership. So to see, to know that selection's getting, or form's getting rewarded with selection, I think that's so exciting, I think. And it just makes me want to get back to my form that I've been in. Obviously a couple of injuries at the start of the season, so probably missed out there. But if I can get anywhere near that form that I've been in the last couple of seasons, hopefully I can give myself a shot.
Hopefully at summer tour, maybe.
Hopefully, yeah. Japan and New Zealand would be very nice. But yeah, look, if I can do my best with Quins and get Quins to a top four and or a semi-final or a final in the Premiership or Europe, then I know that I've done my best and that's all I can give.
Awesome. Well, appreciate your time. Go well at the weekend. Good luck for the rest of the season. Loads of big games coming up. Mm-hmm. So plenty of opportunity to find that try-scoring form.
Yeah, thank you very much.
So last up on this Ruck podcast, behind the scenes with Quins, is head coach Danny Wilson. Danny, a real theme, I think, of everyone we've spoken to in terms of Chandler Cunningham South, Caden Murley, Laurie Dalrymple, the CEO, is the brand of rugby that Harlequins play. And it is a club that feels like has a real identity with the attacking rugby, some fairly mad results and comebacks and things like that in there. From your point of view as a coach, is there a responsibility at all to have to approach the game in a certain way because of that reputation the club has for how they play?
100%. 100%. Yeah. I knew coming here, taking this job, that one it's an identity that I believe in. Maybe not to the extreme levels in the past, but I knew there was a responsibility to come here and play that way and try and add to it. But what we've tried to add is what we call our game model, which gives us something to come back to. We'll not always have to be high risk, high reward. We needed to improve the set piece side of things, which we've done. And as a project, we still obviously got a long way to go, but we're things like we're scoring, driving line outs, we're getting lots of penalties at scrum, credit to Adam Jones in that area. And those things give Quins almost a second line of attack, a different way of beating teams. When the weather sets in, going to the corner and not going for 3 points, well, you're only going to the corner if you can score. And I think we've proven that we can do that. The other area we need to improve to go alongside that is the defensive side of the game, which has had its ups and downs this season. We've had some really good defensive displays and we've had some poor ones. And that's where the stress kicks in, if I'm honest, as a coach, because, you know, the games lately, as you've seen, have been 40-odd points to 30-odd. And the Bordeaux example, where you win by the skin of your teeth, but both teams have scored 6 tries. They're the ones that, or whatever it might be, they're the ones that are the most stressful, if I'm honest.
So how do you balance that as a coach then, of saying, to a degree, that this is us, this is our identity, we're going to get some games like this, and to what extent do you critique it and you're not happy with it and you try and adjust it, if that makes sense?
So what we call ourselves in our game model is we're an 80-20 team. We're 80% Quins identity. We're 80% doesn't change week by week. The 20% is what we call adapt to win. And our adapt to win is we're playing Sale this week. We're playing Northampton next week. How do we... They're two very different sides with different game plans. So Bordeaux is probably a really good example of a very specific game plan to play Bordeaux. But we don't let ourselves go over 20% change. Now, that's kind of and not an exact science. It's kind of a crude kind of figure, 20%. But what it stops us doing is the defence coach saying, I want to change 3 or 4 different things about how we defend this week. The attack coach saying, I want to change 3 or 4 things around the attack, set piece, blah, blah, blah. Now what happens is you're not an 80-20 team. You change every week and you lose your way a little bit in terms of your identity. So it keeps us on track with being Quins and playing the way we play. However, each week there's a 20% of us and what we train that week, very, very specific to the team we're playing.
Oval Insights last week modelled each team's percentage chance of making the playoffs. And over the weekend, you went to Sale and you lost, but your percentage chance, according to their model, increased because they hadn't modelled for you to come back with 2 bonus points. In a run-in like you've got, where, I mean, I described like the Royal Rumble this week, it's everyone's trying to knock everyone else out of this contest for the top four. Do you go to Sale and, although you haven't won the game, come back with 2 points, think that's actually a pretty decent return given everyone's playing everyone? Not that you care about Oval Insights necessarily, but their predictions had that as being a success for you.
Yeah, look, I think coming out there with 2 points, that's what we spoke about afterwards. We lost that first 20-minute, which ultimately cost us, along with other moments in the game, cost us the game at the end. We credited the boys on the amount of fight and come back we showed, because there's other games where we've gone that score down and then it's just got worse. So we fought our way back into the game, we got control, we gave ourselves a chance to win. And, as you said, we walked out there with two bonus points, which we said that could be absolutely vital. To score that last try, remember we're going for that. We're very, very deep in field position and we know we need another try. So we go for it. Then you've got the decision of, with a minute to go, do you keep the two or go for the win? Does that make sense? Because the risk of giving the ball up by going for it and they get 3 points or something down the other end, you've lost a bonus point. So, the key was the positive of bringing that, coming out of there with two bonus points. But I think this group and where we are at the moment, and this is no disrespect to anybody because Sale are an outstanding team, played well on the day and deserved the win. I'm not taking anything away from them, but we still would have gone there with the view to win the game. We weren't going there for two losing bonus points.
Sure.
We were going there for four, if not five. This league is going to be and is heavily contested around bonus points. Bonus points are going to be absolutely vital. So a side that can score four tries most weeks by the approach they take, which is our approach, gives yourself a better chance. But there's only a chance, because if you concede in four, you're in the same boat, aren't you?
We were talking to Laurie about the enormity of the big summer kickoff on Saturday for the club, for getting 60,000 fans in, for attracting new fans, opening the game and the club up to different people. But at the heart of it is a game of rugby, and what you've just described there, of, you know, you playing away, you'll be going out to try and win the game with 4 points. Northampton have a very similar approach. Does that fill you with excitement or slight dread about what Will was talking to you about earlier, about the ding-dong battle could end up being a high-scoring shootout?
Yeah, I think first emotion is excitement. What an opportunity in front of huge crowd at Twickenham. We were fortunate enough to have two of these in a season, which is unbelievable. And for the supporters, I think it's unbelievable. The experience of walking from the stoop to Twickenham with the bridge and the streets lined with Quinns fans is, you know, in your career, as I said to the boys, they're the days you remember, you don't get many of. So the first thing is definitely excitement. As a coach, as a head coach, playing a team like Northampton Saints and the way they play, the way we play, like every game in the last however many weeks, I'd imagine there'll be a fair amount of stress involved. Hence, I'm having the grey cut out of my hair pretty much weekly at the moment. But yeah, that's you know, a given that it's going to be probably a relatively stressful game, but also a very entertaining game is my guess, is my prediction. And we'll certainly play our part in that.
Who drives things? I guess it's all part of it, but from the playing side of it, who are the big voices in the next couple of weeks that you're really going to tap into and rely on? Like, is it the obvious people that we think about, like the game players like Marcus and Danny Kerr and guys like that? Or are there different voices that maybe from the outside you didn't expect were going to be so pivotal before you came?
Yeah, look, we kind of work off two leadership groups, an on-field and an off-field, really. They're titled different than that. The on-field leadership group is also very dependent on selection. Your 9, your 10, your defensive leader, your set-piece leader. And we meet those guys at the start of the week and at the end of the week. Start of the week to help us frame the week. What do they need once they've been selected? The end of the week to make sure we go into the game with the right decision-making process, let's say. So last week, that would have been Will Porter and Marcus, Andre, a defensive leader, the line-out leader, Steph, and captain Steph. So those are the voices that you'll hear on-field. Off-field, what we do here, and we have a certain kind of values and behaviours and so on. Our off-field leadership group is very much spread amongst the age demographic of our group. So we've got some young lads in there, we've got some experienced lads in there, we've got some staff in there. They all contribute to where is our environment at the moment, where is our culture at the moment, where is our behaviours at the moment. And between those two groups, that really forms the leadership for Harlequins.
And just finally, before we let you go, it must be unbelievably exciting, isn't it? I'm just thinking about this time of the season. No, it's normally when the pressure comes on, but you've got Northampton at Twickenham this weekend, a Champions Cup semi-final away to Toulouse, plus then the final games for the run-in where hopefully you'll get top four in the Premiership. Like, from a coach's point of view, is it pressure or is there a huge amount of enjoyment that you're able to take out of that?
Enjoyment first, without a shadow of a doubt. You have to be able to enjoy this job. This job is tough enough as it is. You know, is obviously pressure that's attached to that. There's the dark days, the tough days, and there's the amazing days, like being in that change room after you've beaten Bordeaux away and you've just qualified for the first time in the club's history for a European semi-final. There's nothing to replace that. Players, staff, everybody. But yes, the downside, the other side is the losses, the stresses, the disappointments for people, the hard decisions and conversations you have to have. But yeah, I'd say excitement first, stress second.
Well, good luck. Go well this weekend. Go well for the rest of the season. Thanks for joining us on The Ruck.
Thank you very much.
So there we have it. Thanks to Danny Wilson, Laurie Dalrymple, Caden Murley, Chandler Cunningham South to give us a bit more detail, a bit more of a perspective perhaps about what makes Quinn's tick. It's been good fun.
Caden Murley rocked up on an electric bike,
yeah,
which I think is one of Joe Marler's big legacies at Harlequins. They're quite spread out at Surrey Sports Park, and their changing rooms at the bottom of the hill, and their field is at the top of the hill. And I think Marler introduced the scooter and the bike. Caden Murley rocked up on his. It looked like a bit of a kind of a mini Harley Davidson. Came in here and wins story of the day. Like the Oscar Beard story on the flight was a great one. It really takes you into the kind of the heartbeat of what it means to be part of a rugby team, and particularly after such a historic win. That would have been one hell of a plane ride to be on, I reckon.
Yeah. Do we think the next one, they're back from Toulouse, is going to be as raucous? I still, like, we'll talk about it on Laurie, pods to come. But
if you listen to Laurie, we cannot write them off. We cannot, you know, don't you dare predict that the grand champions of Europe, Toulouse, could possibly beat Harlequins.
Utterly, like, I know Quins are Quins and you can't predict what they're going to do, but it would just be absolutely extraordinary if they were to do it again, yeah, to it basically the best club team of all time.
It would be the Bordeaux win amped up even further, because they'll have to, yeah, they talked about swinging the bat, they'll have to do that, but every element of their game will have to work. I went after the Bordeaux game, took the train to watch Toulouse against Exeter. Exeter made it difficult for them for 45 minutes. Their back row were brilliant, like made a bit of a mess of the breakdown, just disrupted the fluidity of Toulouse. But the moment, like, Jack Willis sort of took control of the breakdown, drove them forward with his carrying, and the moment the dam burst, it was a flood. And Harlequins will need to maintain that for 80 minutes. The where Toulouse are even more dangerous than Bordeaux, I think, are those moments when they get their purple patch. And Quins won't panic, as Caden talked about, but stopping it and reversing it is super hard when you look at the depth they have. Like, after the Champions Cup game, they made a whole load of changes and were able to bring into the team, the starting team, Ramos, Marchand, Chukwuebare, like test standard, world-class standard players who, if they're not in the starting 15, are on the bench. Like, it would be epic, beyond epic, if they were to go into Toulouse City as well.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, I think, I suspect Laurie was being careful in expressing his mild frustration, I suspect.
Mm.
I would be surprised if Harlequins hadn't made representations to say, why is this game in Toulouse?
Yeah. And they don't get the money for it either, because the money gets split among the leagues equally from EPCR. So they did for the Bordeaux game. They got 50% of the tickets, but not this time.
But it would be epic beyond belief if they were to go down there.
And with the Prem too, you just think, like, if they win this weekend, they've got a really, really good shout then of making the top four, although the big games keep on coming like they do for everyone. But I just think, a bit like in 2021 when they weren't in the league, they've got to avoid Saracens. That is just totally Quins' kryptonite. And I don't know quite why they can't do it against Saris, or they do it very irregularly. But of probably any of the teams in the race for that top four, they've just got to avoid that, like, Terminator big boss that they just can't get past. So let's see if they can.
Absolutely. And let's see how they get on this weekend for what I'm sure will be a great event at Twickenham as they face a Northampton side who've been playing unbelievably well this season as well. I'm going to be there for that one, so looking forward to it. And we'll obviously look back on that and all the rest of the Premiership action on Monday's edition of the podcast. Alex, you're going to be there as a fan?
Well, I'll be neutral, but my son will be a fan.
That's what I mean. But you're not there in the press box, though.
No, I'm going to go to Bath Saracens on Friday night, which has massive semi-final implications.
That's another big one, yeah.
Like, at the moment, Bath are second, Saracens are third. Saracens go down there and win, then you'd back them to get a home semi-final. So that would be huge Friday night. And then, yeah, I'll take my older son to Twickenham on Saturday. And, we'll have a good day.
Gloucester Exeter for me, Sunday. I'm slightly thinking it's one of those that now Exeter lost to Bath last week where you go, oh, is there less on that? But we'll see, because as you've mentioned on the pod on Monday and in pieces this week, that sort of Champions Cup qualification jeopardy's kind of gone now. So wondering what to write about on Sunday, but I'm sure there'll be something.
We'll always find something to talk about, and you'll always find something to write about, I'm sure. Thank you for listening to this week's episode, or this bonus episode, I should say, of The Ruck in your feed on a Thursday. Feel free to leave us a review. You can get in touch with the podcast as well. The email address is theruck@thetimes.co.uk. Have a great week. Enjoy the rugby over the weekend, and we'll be back with you next Monday.
The train is now approaching junction at platform. Passengers, airport, please stay on board. Next stop, Road Station.
iOS helps you control which apps you share your exact location with. There's more to iPhone.
Small details are big surfaces. Tight corners are odd shapes. Flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.